Hey, everybody. It is March 27th, Wednesday, March 27th. You're listening to the Mo News Pod. I'm Mo Shwanunu. Hi, Jill.
Hi, Mo. And I'm Jill Wagner. This is the place where we bring you just the facts.
And we read all the news and read between the lines so you do not have to.
Oh, no. We will do it. You absolutely do not have to do it.
Yeah, that's part of the deal here on the Mo News Pod. You hit play and we try to cut out some of the work for you every day.
So Moshe, I saw that somebody messaged you about a ranking which looks at various different news podcasts and sees how political they are, if they're left-leaning or right-leaning. And we were part of this and we came out in the middle, right?
In the middle. It ranks people from left to right, from most liberal to most conservative, but also up to down from least reliable to most reliable. So we are in the most reliable category. We are also in the center. The group is Adfontes, Adfontes. You'll be hearing more from them very soon. We have an interview with their founder who explains how they go about analyzing media to give people a sense of the potential bias and also the reliability of podcasts, of news websites. And so it's an honor to be ranked on the Adfontes Index. And you'll be seeing more of that on Instagram. And again, look out over on the Mo News Interview podcast for more on that.
Reliable and down the middle. Sounds perfect.
We might have an additional line to add to the top of every day's podcast.
Okay, Mosh, let's get to some headlines here. What we know about the deadly Baltimore bridge collapse. To the Supreme Court, most justices seem skeptical about an effort to restrict abortion pill access. RFK Jr. picks his vice presidential candidate, Nicole Shanahan. Who is she and why did RFK Jr. pick her? Staying with politics, Joe Biden is making a bit of a comeback in swing states. And Donald Trump's Truth Social had a successful first day as a publicly traded company. What Donald Trump is now worth. In other business news, potentially some savings for us when we go to ring things up in a store. Visa and MasterCard have settled a long-running antitrust suit over swipe fees. Plus, chocolate prices are skyrocketing. We'll tell you why. And a new partnership between McDonald's and Krispy Kreme. Plus, Moshe's on this day in history.
Jill, we'll give you a little history of the cherry blossoms in Washington and Viagra in On This Day in History.
Let's begin with tragedy in Baltimore, a massive bridge collapse. As of Tuesday evening, six people were presumed dead. This is what we now know. Early Tuesday morning, a massive cargo ship leaving the Port of Baltimore lost power and issued a Mayday call shortly before striking the Francis Scott Key Bridge. Divers and emergency workers on boats and helicopters spent almost 24 hours searching for construction workers who had been fixing potholes on that bridge. Two construction workers had been rescued earlier. Six had remained missing. And as of late Tuesday, authorities say that they shifted from a search and rescue operation to a recovery effort. The cargo ship, the Dolly, issued a Mayday call as it lost power and began drifting around 1:30 a.m. Tuesday morning. It gave officials a brief chance to stop cars and try to evacuate the bridge, which spans 1.6 miles. Initially, officials had feared that drivers were submerged in their cars in the Patapsco River, but the warning from Dolly, a Singapore-flagged vessel, gave officials enough time to stop traffic at both ends of the bridge. It reportedly took officers less than 2 minutes to stop that traffic.
Jill, we posted a couple of videos on the Instagram account, and in them, you can see vehicles moving across the bridge just seconds before the ship actually goes into the bridge.
Which means we can only imagine how much worse this could have potentially been in terms of victims. However, it does not appear that there was time to alert the construction crew that was fixing the potholes on the bridge. Radio traffic indicates that officers were just about to alert that crew when the bridge collapsed after being hit by the container ship. Here's a little bit of the timeline. The Dolly, a 948-foot-long cargo vessel, it left Baltimore at 1 a.m., bound for Sri Lanka. It lost power and propulsion several minutes later and then crashed into the bridge around 1:30. All crew members were accounted for, and there were no injuries on the ship, according to the owners.
Yeah, to your point, Jill, the fact that this also happened at 1:30 overnight, as opposed to during rush hour during the day. is something that was noted by officials. The FBI in Baltimore said in a statement that there was no specific or credible information to suggest any ties to terrorism or whether this was done purposeful at all. Again, as you mentioned, they did do a May Day warning that did allow them to cut off traffic onto the bridge with seconds to spare. And now the investigation dives into what exactly went wrong aboard this ship. The New York Times reports that an inspection of the Dali at a port in Chile last year found that the vessel had a deficiency related to what they call propulsion and auxiliary machinery. The inspection, which took place last June, specified that the deficiency aboard the ship concerned gauges and thermometers. A spokesperson for the Dali and their company has no comment at this time. Here in the U.S., the National Transportation Safety Board will lead the investigation into the cause of the collapse, and they'll be looking into things like bridge design. The bridge was opened back in 1977, almost 50 years old, and whether the bridge design here contributed in any way, shape, or form to that immediate collapse. You see it really just fold up there as this huge cargo ship goes into the side. As far as the FSK Bridge, it is something that is very well known in Maryland, or if you have to travel along the eastern seaboard. It carries more than 11 million vehicles every year. It's on the I-695 highway, known as the Baltimore Beltway. And this could create traffic issues for a long time here. It also leads to a key port. Baltimore is the busiest port in terms of car shipments, as well as the largest for farm and construction machinery in the U.S. It also happens to be a cruise terminal for a lot of cruise lines as they make their way up and down the East Coast. So as of right now, all shipping is halted as they deal with the aftermath, again, the search and rescue here. The port will probably get back up. The traffic situation and the roads, that is something that could take years as they rebuild this bridge.
The pictures were incredible. I mean, it almost doesn't look real how quickly the bridge just collapsed into the water. I almost thought the video was being sped up.
Yeah, we looked at a couple various videos to make sure that was real, but no, that happened very quickly. And it's hard for people to gauge just how large this cargo container ship is. Each of those containers, and there are hundreds of them aboard this ship, are 40 feet long, and you have this 1,000-foot long ship. So this is a massive ship going into the side of a bridge here.
Now to the big Supreme Court arguments we were watching on Tuesday. A majority of the justices, conservative and liberal, appeared deeply skeptical over efforts to curtail access to a widely used abortion pill, mifepristone. The fundamental question that they asked was whether a group of anti-abortion doctors and organizations had standing or the right to challenge the FDA's approval of the medication. The current challenge involves mifepristone, a drug approved by the FDA more than two decades ago. At issue is whether the agency acted appropriately in expanding access to the drug back in 2016 and then again in 2021. But much of the arguments focused not on the recent changes by the FDA, but rather on the underlying statements by anti-abortion doctors and whether their claims were enough to bring the case in the first place. So to bring the legal challenge, the anti-abortion doctors and groups must show that they will suffer concrete harm if the pill remains widely available. Again, that is called standing. Describing the case as an effort by a handful of individuals, conservative Justice Neil Gorsuch raised whether it would stand as a prime example of turning what could be a small lawsuit into a nationwide legislative assembly on an FDA rule. Gorsuch, along with several other justices, asked pointed questions, including whether any of the doctors involved in the lawsuit can show actual injury from the federal government's approval and regulation of mifepristone. At one point, liberal Justice Elena Kagan asked the lawyer for the anti-abortion groups who they were relying on to show an actual injury from the drug, stating, "You need a person. Who is your person?"
Yeah, and the attorney for the anti-abortion side pointed to one doctor, Dr. Christina Francis, whose partner had to perform a D&C procedure due to a life-threatening injury for a woman who had taken the medication. Now, Kagan asked if the doctor stated her objection at the time. They said, no, they did not. And so then Kagan replies to the attorney saying, the way people with conscientious objections do this is they make those objections known. The issue for this side here is they didn't have any of the more than 5 million women who had taken the drug over the last 24 years as part of their case. So again, we're looking at a potentially narrow ruling here, not on the drug itself or the FDA, but more that the litigants here, at least on the side of the anti-abortion rights people, didn't have the standing to bring this case up at all.
And Moshe, to that point, wouldn't the anti-abortion side have to prove that the patient that Dr. Christina Francis had to perform that D&C on had received the mifepristone because the regulations around it were lowered back in 2016. Because technically, if she was prescribed it by a doctor in person, that wouldn't have fallen under the post-2016 application.
This case over time has changed. Remember, originally when they filed suit here, they were going against approval altogether, the 2000 approval. That became more limited over time. So they weren't going to kill approval altogether here, but more the making it more expansively available. Either way, it does not appear the court is going to rule in their direction, at least based on the questions we heard yesterday. Only two of the justices, Sam Alito and Clarence Thomas, appeared to show some support for the anti-abortion challengers. A decision on this, like many big cases, is expected at the season finale of the Supremes at the end of June. That's typically when the Supreme Court puts out their biggest cases. And the ramifications for this were big, as we mentioned in the newsletter and on the podcast, that if they sided with the folks taking issue with this, it could have cut off prescriptions for telemedicine and for pills by mail in all 50 states. Again, it does not look like that. Right now, medication is used in nearly 2 out of 3 abortions in this country. And it is worth remembering, should they rule with the FDA side here and sort of boot this case out, it still means that abortion remains illegal in more than a dozen states. So mifepristone will still not be available in those states. All right, we have a lot more to get to in today's podcast. But first, we want to thank one of our newest partners here on the Mo News Podcast, Good Shop. That is Good Chop, C-H-O-P. They offer customizable boxes of high-quality meat and seafood delivered directly to your door on your schedule. There's a lot more of this lately, Jill, you know, especially those people looking for high-quality meat, high-quality fish, and we're loving Good Chop so far. The products are vacuum-sealed. They are frozen at peak freshness, so you can stock your freezer and cook when you want it. And it includes everything from 100% grass-fed ribeyes, USDA prime filet mignon, sustainable and wild-caught seafood like salmon, cod, scallops, and shrimp. We have made the chicken. We have made the salmon. Have loved it so far. And unlike many other companies, Good Shop sources its meat exclusively from American farms and fisheries, so you can support local farms and fisheries here in the U.S. They also make a point of sourcing meat that comes with no antibiotics, no added hormones, no artificial ingredients, only the good stuff. And when you calculate it out, the price per meal for Good Chop is just $3.74. So definitely check it out. You can go to goodchop.com/monews120. That is good, G-O-O-D, chop, C-H-O-P, .com/monews120. And use the code monews120 to get $120 off your first 4 boxes. Again, the code is monews120 at goodchop.com/monews120 for $120 off.
And Moshe, we are always talking about health trends and food trends here on the podcast and how hard it is to get all of your nutrients. Well, one way to get all the important ones is Athletic Greens AG1 powder. I take AG1 in the mornings. It is just one scoop with a glass of water. It is easy and quick, and it lets you get on with your day knowing that you have gotten over 75 important ingredients, including tons of vitamins and minerals. It also has pre and probiotics to support digestion and gut health. I have a friend who calls it his insurance policy. He drinks it in the morning and feels like he's good for the rest of the day, regardless of what he eats or drinks. With your first purchase of AG1, Athletic Greens is giving Mo News listeners a free 1-year supply of their vitamin D and 5 free travel packs of AG1. Visit drinkag1.com/monews to take advantage of this offer. You could get a discounted monthly subscription or try it one time for just a month. Again, drinkag1.com/monews, M-O-N-E-W-S, for this special deal, and really start to take ownership of your health. Time now for the speed read from NBC News. Independent presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. announced Tuesday that Nicole Shanahan will be joining his campaign as his vice presidential selection. She is a wealthy, progressive attorney and entrepreneur in the San Francisco Bay Area. Shanahan, who, like Kennedy, has never run for elected office, has contributed to his campaign and his super PAC she previously has donated to Democrats. Kennedy made the announcement Tuesday at an event in Shanahan's hometown of Oakland. Here is a bit of RFK and Shanahan on Tuesday.
As recently as a year ago, I really didn't think much of Bobby Kennedy because I didn't know much about him. All I had was a mainstream media narrative that was effectively telling me horrible, disparaging things. But then a friend who's here today pulled me aside and she said, Nicole, please do me a favor. Just listen to an interview with Bobby Kennedy, just one. So I did. I did. And then I listened to another one and then another one. And I recognized that the person who I was seeing in these interviews was the exact opposite of the media slander of his character.
I wanted someone with a spiritual dimension and compassion and idealism and above all, a deep love for the United States of America. And I found all of those qualities in a woman who grew up right here in Oakland. The daughter of immigrants who overcame every daunting obstacle and went on to achieve the highest levels of the American dream.
So Kennedy's pick here, and that big event yesterday, comes at a key point for his campaign. Independent presidential candidates, as we've told you, have to navigate a lot of rules for getting on the ballot state by state. And in more than half the states, if you're an independent, you're required to file your nominating papers with your running mate. So this was important for him to be able to get on the ballot in a number of states to actually make this announcement this early. Some of the deadlines in some of the states are approaching very quickly. Right now, between the Super PAC and the Kennedy campaign, they believe they're on the ballot in 8 states, or they at least they've gotten enough signatures to get on the ballot. Officially, he's only on the ballot in Utah. There's a whole number of other swing states, Michigan, New Hampshire, Arizona, among them that he believes he has the signatures for. But this is before those petitions have been vetted, litigated. As we told you earlier this week, Democrats are filing a lot of lawsuits and will make this difficult for Kennedy, particularly because he is taking more votes from Biden than Trump right now. And so he's made the Shanahan announcement. And so that'll help him try to get on the ballot. Right now, his polling in the states where he believes he's on the ballot shows him at anywhere between 10 and 15%. That's Arizona. That's Michigan. That's North Carolina. Again, not nearly enough to win here, but enough to have an impact. In this case, an impact that is slightly helping Trump here. And we'll get to that in the next story. As far as his VP search, why he ended up landing on Shanahan, part of it has to do with who said no to him. He was looking at Aaron Rodgers, the former New York Jets quarterback, the former Minnesota governor, Jesse Ventura, former Democratic Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard, TV host Mike Rowe. You might know him. Apparently, he described his interview to NBC News where Kennedy ran through his various policy positions and also defended his pushback on vaccines. Ultimately, one of the reasons he went with Shanahan is that she was a big supporter of his. She's donated millions of dollars to his campaign and was involved in that Super Bowl ad that got a lot of attention earlier this year.
And not to be too much of a skeptic, but she's also extremely, extremely wealthy, which means she can be a big help to him. As we said, it's very expensive to get your name on the ballot.
Yeah. So that's going to be key here as Kennedy makes his case. And Jill, one question we get is, will he be in the debates in the fall? And that'll fall on the Commission on Presidential Debates in the fall. Typically, the threshold is 15% in several polls, and he's getting pretty close there. So with some more attention, you could see, again, if the debates happen, a Biden-Trump-Kennedy debate in the fall. And there are questions there. Trump says he wouldn't partake. Then he said he would partake. Biden won't commit to it, but then sort of is into it. Kennedy desperately wants to be in those debates to get his message out. So that would be the first three-person debate, Jill, we would see since Ross Perot back in the 90s when he was getting these sort of numbers.
If you had to predict right now, do you think we're going to get a presidential debate?
On this March 27th, I believe there will be at least one. And Jill, the reason I think so is Biden's performance at the State of the Union. Now, two different things, running a debate where you have a moderator going after you, candidates going after you, versus a speech where you're just getting applause and no one can respond. But he did show a certain level of energy there. So that might prove to, you know, Biden advisors, we think he can hold his own there. Now, again, can he go toe-to-toe with Trump for 90 minutes, along with Kennedy, along with a moderator, asking challenging questions? TBD. But that's sort of where my gut is in late March.
And to that end, Moshe, that brings us to the story from Axios. President Biden has made significant gains against Donald Trump during the past month in 6 of 7 2024 swing states. This is according to a new Bloomberg Morning Consult poll. It is the first time in months that the swing state poll has Biden within striking distance of Trump. The poll measured a period in which Biden followed his impassioned State of the Union address With a swing state tour and a series of sharp attacks on Trump, Biden performed best in the Rust Belt swing states, where both candidates have been arguing that they are the best to resuscitate American industry.
Yeah, we're coming off of a few months here where Trump had a lead against Biden, not insignificant lead by a few points there. Now, for the most part, these all fall within the margin of error. That's always key when you guys look at polls. You know, always look at the MOE or margin of error. Sometimes it's upwards of 5 to 7% when you look on a state basis, which means those numbers, you can +5 or -5 to each of the candidates to give you a sense for where things land. Effectively, I think we can say these two are pretty much tied in most states. Right now, the poll showed the president with a 1-point lead in Wisconsin, tied with Trump in Pennsylvania and Michigan, drawing closer in Nevada. Again, all within the margin of error here, which basically means it's a toss-up. At the same time, Trump still holds a more significant beyond the margin of error lead in Arizona and North Carolina, as well as leading in Georgia. But that, again, only accounts for head-to-head battles, Jill. Remember our last story, RFK is trying to get on the ballot in a number of those states. He's getting upwards of 10%. Also, don't forget Jill Stein and Cornel West, who are also running from the left and could see a couple percentage points. That could take points away from Biden. The theme here being, add in Cornel West, add in Jill Stein, add in RFK Jr., and when you look at those polls that take those into account, it actually then turns into a more significant lead again for Trump. Hence the concern among Democrats about these third-party candidates, that people are so disenchanted, you know, having to look at the same two dudes on the ballot again, that they are willing to vote the other direction. And the supporters of Trump are much more impassioned and will double down on him again, whereas Biden people are not impassioned. And that's something they will have to figure out in terms of turnout, especially when it comes to Black voters, Latino voters. That's something that we've talked about on the pod and newsletter in recent weeks.
And a quick follow-up to a story we mentioned yesterday. Shares of Donald Trump's social media company rose about 16% in the first day of trading on the NASDAQ, boosting the value of Trump's large stake in the company, as well as the smaller holdings of fans who purchased shares as a show of support for the former president. Trump Media and Technology Group merged Monday with a blank check company called Digital World Acquisition Corp. Trump Media, which runs the social media platform Truth Social, has now taken Digital World's place on the NASDAQ stock exchange. So shares closed at $57.99, up again 16.1%, giving the company a market value of $7.85 billion. At one point, the stock was up about 59%.
Yeah, trading was so crazy. They actually halted trading early in the day there, then reopened it. Again, the Trump Media stock worth just under $8 billion after the first day of trading. He holds a 60% ownership stake in the company, which means that alone is worth $4.6 billion. His net worth went up by $4.6 billion yesterday. Now, because of the way this went to market, he cannot cash in on that for at least 6 months unless the board of the company gives him the option to sell shares early. But of course, if he sells, that could lead other folks to sell. So that's something we're watching here, whether this is, you know, pretty volatile. And also the fact that this company is worth $8 billion, but when you look at revenue, it's only a couple million dollars. So there are a lot of skeptics here looking at this stock and wondering whether it'll hold or whether there will be an inevitable collapse here. And that's something that matters a lot to Trump, as he needs money right now for his legal cases, as well as the campaign trail. So we will stay on top of this business meets politics story for you.
To the Middle East from Reuters, Hamas has rejected the latest U.S. and Israel approved 6-week ceasefire offer, informing mediators that it is sticking to its original positions and that the war will continue until there is a permanent ceasefire and a complete withdrawal of all Israeli troops. The terrorist group is also demanding what it calls a, quote, real exchange of prisoners. Israel has softened its position in recent weeks and agreed to a U.S. proposal that would release more than 700 Palestinian prisoners, including those that are serving life in prison for murder, in exchange for 40 Israeli hostages. But Hamas is demanding more prisoners as part of the deal and something beyond that 6-week ceasefire. Israel has already rejected the Hamas demands as delusional and pulled some of its negotiators from talks in Qatar after this round of talks fell apart. And it comes as we told you that the UN Security Council on Monday called for an immediate ceasefire and that the U.S. did not veto it, just abstained, which is why it was able to pass.
Yeah, Hamas praised that. In fact, the leader of Hamas is in Iran celebrating that. And that's the feeling among the Israelis and the U.S. as to why Hamas rejected this, because things seem to be going in their way right now when it comes to global rhetoric, etc. So they're holding out for an even better deal, even though this gives them a six-week ceasefire, hundreds of prisoners, etc. Now, at the same time, the humanitarian situation and potential for famine continues to grow more dire in Gaza. Hamas has actually been under pressure from the Qataris and the Egyptians to accept a deal here to alleviate the humanitarian crisis. That's another component of this ceasefire offer that they rejected, that more aid would come into Gaza. But again, Hamas is looking at this globally, and they feel like they have the momentum for their organization and their survival. And so they're willing for this war to continue here, because again, they're not taking the wrath of the incoming that the Israelis are. And it comes as the Israeli defense minister was in Washington yesterday meeting with a number of senior leaders, including the Secretary of State Blinken. That was earlier in the week. Secretary of State Austin met with the defense minister Yoav Gallant. Remarks at the start of their meeting at the Pentagon yesterday, Austin said that they would discuss alternative ways to target Hamas in Rafah. He described the civilian casualties as far too high, the aid deliveries as far too low. And so there's been a lot of pressure from the Americans on the Israelis in recent days. The Israeli defense minister pushing back, emphasizing the ongoing threat on the Israelis, saying they have to destroy Hamas here, get the Israeli hostages released, and pointing to the fact that Hamas has rejected the most recent ceasefire deal.
To business news from ABC News, Visa and MasterCard announced a major settlement with U.S. merchants on Tuesday. It potentially ends nearly two decades of litigation over the fees charged every time a credit or debit card is used in a store or restaurant. The deal would lower and cap the fees charged by Visa and MasterCard and allow small businesses to collectively bargain for rates with the payment processors. That is similar to the way that large merchants do now. Swipe fees are paid to Visa and MasterCard and other credit card companies in exchange for enabling transactions. Merchants ultimately pass on those fees to consumers who use credit or debit cards. The fees are calculated as a fixed fee plus a percentage of the sales total, typically about 1% to 3%. Industry groups for retailers, both small and large, say that the settlement is a positive development, but that far more needs to be done to remedy the current swipe fee situation. They noted that the fees would only be lowered for a limited period of time, 3 to 5 years, after which the fees would return to their current levels.
Yeah, so a temporary deal here. You may have noticed recently, if you buy something, especially smaller retails, is that small businesses will have signs up at the register warning customers that they will pay more if they use credit card and not use cash. According to the settlement yesterday, Visa and MasterCard will cap what's called the credit interchange fees until the year 2030, and the companies must negotiate the fees with merchant buying groups. In the announcement of the settlement, they put the value of the savings in swipe fees at about $30 billion. This all stems from a lawsuit that's nearly 20 years old back in 2005 that alleged merchants paid excessive fees to accept Visa and MasterCard credit cards, and that Visa and MasterCard and their member banks were in violation of antitrust laws here.
Staying with business from CNBC, consumers could start to see the effect of surging cocoa prices in chocolate and other items. It comes as the world faces the worst supply deficit in decades, with farmers in West Africa struggling against bad weather, disease, and failing trees. Chocolate is now more expensive than copper per metric ton. Cocoa has more than tripled in cost over the past year and is up 129% in 2024. The National Confectioners Association said that the industry is working with retailers to manage down costs and keep chocolate affordable for consumers.
Hashtag save chocolate, everyone. The world is facing the largest cocoa supply deficit in more than 60 years. And we could see this as soon as Easter. I don't know if you guys have been noticing, but Easter chocolate could start getting pricier here. The International Cocoa Organization, I'm learning about all these cocoa-related organizations now, Jill, as we dive into the story. They've put out a forecast of a supply deficit of 374,000 tons for this season. That is a 400% increase from the deficit of the previous season. So just take away from that, there's a shortage of expected cocoa here. And experts say the worst is yet to come. Cocoa prices will likely remain elevated because there's no easy fix to any of this with the failing crop, with the drought issues, etc. So notice this, you could either face higher prices, or if the prices are the same, it could be a form of shrinkflation in the form of less chocolate or smaller chocolate bars. One thing also to be looking out for is that companies might start to adjust their ingredients and use less cocoa in some products. The worst sticker shock is if you're a fan of dark chocolate, that has a very high cocoa content. So that's where you could see prices higher or the most shrinkflation. And again, you might see this as soon as buying your Easter chocolate in the next couple of weeks.
All right. And now to maybe some better food news, finally from CBS.
Not better for your cholesterol or your sugar count, but better just generally speaking.
Just it will put you in a better mood. Yes. McDonald's is going to start selling Krispy Kreme donuts at its fast food locations this year as part of a phased rollout that will bring the baked goods to its restaurants across the country. Under that partnership announced on Tuesday, Krispy Kreme will deliver three versions of its donuts: glazed, chocolate iced with sprinkles, and chocolate iced with a cream filling to McDonald's locations each morning. Customers can buy the donuts individually or in a box of six. The rollout begins in the second half of this year, and it comes as the company's tested the partnership at 160 McDonald's locations in Kentucky and Indiana, and demand exceeded both companies' expectations.
Shocker. People wanted more Krispy Kreme with their McDonald's.
I don't know why that surprised them. I'm surprised their expectations were high.
Maybe they ran their estimates and they're like, whoa, like we thought we were going to sell a lot, but we sold even more. So shares of Krispy Kreme were way up yesterday as part of this excitement. This is all part of McDonald's plan to bolster its breakfast and coffee sales. And it comes as they're competing with Starbucks and Dunkin' for consumers in the morning. The deal will significantly expand Krispy Kreme's footprint in the U.S. Right now, there's about 377 locations of Krispy Kreme, mostly in California and in the South. And Jill, Wendy's is not letting this go unmatched. The latest reporting from Wendy's is they're partnering with Cinnabon to add a breakfast menu. The Cinnabon pull-apart is described by Wendy's as a sweet treat that takes the nostalgic classic cinnamon roll and transforms the ooey-gooey center into bite-sized bits. So you got McDonald's and Krispy Kreme, and you got Wendy's and Cinnabon.
Cinnabon versus Krispy Kreme. Which one are you going with?
But at the same time, you got McDonald's and Wendy's. I don't think you can pull apart the running mate, the donut running mate,
True.
The leading presidential candidate. So I think you got to pick a ticket, Jill. It's sort of like voting. You got to make sure you got to like the presidential candidate and the VP.
You need to like the top of the ticket as well. All right, so Wendy's Cinnabon versus McDonald's Krispy Kreme.
I have to say this. I don't know much about Wendy's breakfast offering, so I'm ignorant on it. I'm going to go in with my gut, which is McDonald's Krispy Kreme. But again, I know nothing of the Wendy's breakfast offering. So I think we're going to have to take this to a taste test and see what combination works. And frankly, Jill, I don't hate this idea.
I live for it. And this type of fairness and honesty about yes. where you're coming from is why we were ranked reliable and down the middle.
Right. We're going to keep it straight for you, whether it's Democrat, Republican, or Wendy's, McDonald's, Krispy Kreme, and Cinnabon. Jill, are we ready for On This Day in History?
I'm ready.
All right. On This Day in History, we begin in the year 1912 in Washington, D.C. The First Lady, Helen Taft, wife of President William Taft, and the Viscountess Chinda, the wife of the Japanese ambassador, plant the first two cherry trees on the banks of the Potomac River near the Jefferson Memorial. It was part of a commemoration of the gift by the Japanese government, some 3,000 cherry trees to the U.S. government. Helen Taft, the First Lady, had lived in Japan while William Taft, pre-presidency, was the president of the Philippine Commission. She loved the beauty of the cherry blossoms, and ultimately, she made it known. The Japanese consul general found out about this and suggested the gift. And now, of course, if you're ever in D.C. in the spring, it is quite a beautiful sight. It's an iconic sight, seeing those cherry blossoms. All right, fast forward to on this day in 1964, Alaska was hit with a magnitude 9.2 earthquake. That is the strongest recorded in North American history. Ultimately, the quake would also lead to a tsunami that would claim more than 100 lives. All right, back to fast food news. On this day in 1968, Red Lobster was incorporated. And in prescription drug news, on this day, 26 years ago, Viagra from the pharma company Pfizer was approved for the first time by the FDA for use in erectile dysfunction.
If you're waiting for me to comment, I'm not.
We'll move on to a bit of music history here. You might recognize this tune.
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill.
Schoolhouse Rock's I'm Just a Bill first aired on ABC on this day 48 years ago. Wow. Schoolhouse Rock, nearly 50 years old. Joe, I still refer to it in our Instagram feed when people are asking me like, well, so the TikTok bill passed the House. I'm like, well, as you know from I'm Just a Bill, it now heads over to the Senate and they have to pass the same piece of legislation. And if they change it, it goes back to the House. So I'm Just a Bill, core civics education, Jill, still stands the test of time.
It does. I think it's better than a lot of social studies lessons that I've sat through.
A couple other musical items here. ABBA released their song Fernando on this date in 1976. There was something in the air that night. The stars were bright, Fernando. And an iconic song from the 90s. I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was a baller. Skilos, I Wish, was released on this day 29 years ago, March 27th, 1995.
I wish I had a girl who looked good. I would call her.
Yes, Jill. Some of those songs, I think they've studied this, that your brain is like, for some reason, the pop culture and the music that like becomes your thing between the ages of like 10 and 20 or 22. Like we have the ability to recount those lyrics for the rest of time and those, you know, pop culture references. And so whatever music comes out during that time, like it stays with you for a lifetime. You're welcome, Skilo.
Yeah, I cannot remember what I ate for breakfast, but I remember the lines to I Wish from 1995.
Which, as we've mentioned on the podcast often, Jill, what was happening in 1995?
I was peaking.
You were peaking.
Is that where you were going for?
That's where I was going. Jill hasn't mentioned on the podcast this week that she peaked in the 90s, so I was giving you the opportunity.
I feel like I've said it a lot, and so I was taking a little bit of a break.
We were taking a break, but no, but it's okay.
But sure.
We'll end there.
Let's keep it going. All right, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Mo News podcast. If you like what you hear, please share this with your friends. It will help us grow. Follow us and subscribe so you don't miss an episode, and review us in the App Store. I'm laughing, Moshe, because I feel like we should do a news quiz that's not necessarily based on news of the week on the premium feed. We should do like a idiosyncrasies of the podcast, like things that we say a lot. We've got range. I peaked in the 90s. Moshe, you're like a human encyclopedia. Just all these things that we tend to say, like our shtick here on the pod.
Right. And in some cases, you guys will call out the shtick being like, Moshe, if you use the word X one more time, like I cannot listen to the podcast anymore. So if there are idiosyncrasies that are annoying you, listeners, please let us know. We aim to please. Now, I can't guarantee you that I'll change it, but I do like to hear if like you like certain things or you don't like certain things. So anyway, feedback is welcome. Not in those reviews, Jill mentioned, do it directly to us and just give us the 5-star review and tell people about the good things you like about the podcast in their reviews.
No, but people message me all the time with really funny memes or videos about grocery prices being so expensive, because that's kind of my pet peeve.
You're known for grocery prices. Yeah.
Moshe, did you finish our reading out?
Listen, guys, leave us the review. That'd be great. Also, we have that new podcast, Mo News, The Interview. If you're not following it, please follow it already. If you haven't joined Mo News Premium and you get this far in the podcast, what are you doing with your life? Come join Mo News Premium, mo.news/premium. It's a way to support this here on podcast. It is also a way to get additional news information, deep dives, history, behind the scenes content, the premium podcast, weekend news, the news quiz. We're offering the kitchen sink these days over at Mo News Premium. So mo.news/premium. Get on it.
All right, everyone. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Mo News podcast.